Hello and welcome to The Undermined, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonko, your host from makingcomputerdothings.com. Let us begin. Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of The Undermined, a very special episode because it's the 10th and it's special. My guests today are Dennis Walther, aka Bytekeeper. Hello.
Hi there.
Marian Deveca from last night, the author of Killerbot. Hello.
Hello.
And Hannes Bradberg, yet again. Hello, Hannes.
That's me.
So that's being out of the way. It's a cast when I have no new guests. Everyone is a returning guest, which fills me with great joy. And I wanted to ask Antiga about his BSL performance, but unfortunately no news of that yet. Have you heard anything about him?
I haven't, but I think I've stayed quite up to date with everything that's happening with him and what he said, so I don't think they have anything to announce.
All right, we wish him the very best, at least I do. And let's get on with the first topic, which is to Bytekeeper. What's the state on Basil and what's up with it? Is there any improvement lately?
Well, improvement. It's running again after it crashed. There are some minor hardware issues, but it's I don't want to really investigate much time in it because it's once in 3 months where it crashes. I updated the machine. I hope it will run a bit longer. Other than that, there's no real news. I tried to improve the performance of it a bit. Mainly the downloading of the bots is done in parallel. I mean, not the SSCIT bots, but the Basil bots. There are still some Basil-only bots. Crazio and I think McGrave are the only ones using it, but you can't actually trust that they're using the same bot on SCCIT or and in Basil now.
Sounds sneaky. You tried turning it off and on again and it worked.
Yes, I restarted the machine and it worked again.
I haven't looked at Basil lately. Is there a great discrepancy in scores for SSCIT ladder and Basil?
I haven't checked SSCIT ladder lately, but I think Purple Wave is a lot higher on Basil.
Any idea why is that? Maybe it's just a different version or anything working differently on Basil?
No idea, really.
Well, all right. What are the improvements you're considering for the Basil? Maybe not right now, but in the future.
Yeah, well, there are some issues. If you know, you can actually go to the GitHub page and just create issues for me, and I will not do them by default, but I will take a look and maybe I'll consider doing some of them. So for now, I don't have anything planned because it's mainly never touch a running system. And there are no major problems. I think Dan actually said there was a problem with frame zero with his bot, sometimes not finding the minerals. I didn't take a look because he's at rank 4, so I don't know if it's really a huge problem.
All right. Sounds like it works well enough, and that's good news. And speaking of SSCIT, last week's cast was very interesting, yet again. And what do you think of the results, and who do you think will win? Not just the tournament itself, but the brackets. I'm curious to hear your opinions about that.
Well, I hope Chris, you will make it, but I don't know. I didn't follow exactly. Don't know if he managed to come through the loser bracket or if he failed. But I like this spot. I hope it comes to the end, but I think Seda will win.
It's on 6th place in the loser's bracket, I think.
Oh, did it get knocked out? I didn't dare say anything because I don't remember if I watched the latest, if what I watched was the latest cast or not. I watched something quite recently and was crazy OP like halfway through the loser's bracket. Is that the latest cast?
I think it was.
And it's not knocked out yet.
No, it's not. It's actually up against Banana Brain next.
Okay, then I'm probably up to date then. I would love to see Crazy OP move on, but I kind of doubt that it would like be in the top. It might be able to get into the top four, but I don't think it's going to get any further than that.
Nothing. You mean the loser's top four?
Yeah, exactly. Overall, if it makes it to the finals, I guess it's like number two anyways. If it wins the loser's bracket, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, there's Banana Brain. It's really a tough opponent, but I think if it defeats Banana Brain, it has a high probability to win the loser's bracket.
Yeah, it's a very interesting bot. And I'm also looking forward to Purple Wave versus Saida, and if Saida wins, then Saida versus Locutus. These matches will be definitely very interesting.
Oh yeah, I'm willing to bet that there are some anti-Saida tactics in most of the bots by now. As we have discussed before, Saida is mostly hard-coded. It has some adaptation, but I remember the insane amount of collaboration going on when Seda just got into the ladder and beat everyone. everyone helped everyone else beating it, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
It's a very solid bot. What it does, how it reacts to, for example, Dark Templar drops and things like that, has or Zealot harassment, has some very good reactions. But it's mostly very strong versus Zerg. The Protoss players are able to beat it, and I've seen even Mechrave Protoss beat it or almost beat it.
For a while it was vulnerable to bunker rushes, if I remember correctly. Then that got updated and it's no longer vulnerable to that. Does Killerbot have any specific tactic against Seda, or any specific tactic against opponents? I mean, hard-coded tactics against specific opponents.
No, I don't do that. I basically have builds that react to what I see, not to player names or things like that. But I specifically prepared the two Hedge Mutalisk for Seda. Unfortunately, it's not so well tuned that it only wins maybe like 10% of games or something like that if the moon is in the correct position and stars are aligned well, then the first Mutalisk deal enough damage that Seda is crippled and I basically win. But my Mutalisk in general are not as smart to do that every time, unfortunately.
I think it's mostly depending of whether if Jupiter's in ascendancy, but maybe that's just for people with the horoscope of Sagittarius. I'm not sure. Other thing, I saw your Mutalisk micro in one of the Nepeta casts, and one thing I noticed, you seem to have just one big blob of Mutalisks and like 50 Mutalisks in one blob. Is that something that always happens, or was just specific to that one game?
So I have support for multiple Mutalisk groups. Basically, I could just turn it on with one changing code. The changing code basically says what is the maximum amount of Mutalisk in the group. And in the beginning, I had set it to something like, I don't know, 12. Depending on matchup, you need less in where you're fighting Marines and stuff like that, and you need higher when you're fighting mech and Protoss things. But I think if you have smaller groups, is that the Mutalisk are afraid of a lot of things. So it's much better to have them stuck together, and then they become very fearless when the numbers get higher, like to 20, and they become unstoppable. Whereas if you had two groups of 12, they could be on different parts of a map, and I could not engage a blob of Goliaths, for example, or something like that.
Do you have specific tactics against nukes?
No, I don't think that I was nuked, but if that ever happens, I might consider having that.
It might have happened. I'm not gonna tell you if you're not aware.
It's probable, but yeah, nobody has told me yet.
That's good. Let's keep it that way.
Okay.
The secret nukes.
Ninja nukes.
This is a whole new territory for Johannes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not that usual that people don't notice themselves getting nuked, but sure.
Alright. A thing I noticed, and well, I'm not following the pro StarCraft scene for a while, but it seems to me that some tactics and builds are in resurgence, like we have come full circle and builds from 10 years ago is viable again. And I think that's a beautiful thing because it shows that Brood War is a very well balanced game and there is no one surefire way to win. And I don't know if we will reach that point in both games. I mean, right now there are very specific tactics and they are mostly derived from human games and they work quite well. I don't know if you have in your bots, do you have anything that is not that feasible for a human but successful in bot versus bot matches?
Well, of course, for the Mutalisk, a normal player cannot stack more than 12. The best pro gamers can micro two stacked groups at the same time, but for a normal human being that is not possible. And also if for example you get irradiate on your stacked Mutalisk, for a human player he cannot immediately select the irradiated Mutalisk and put order it to go somewhere far away. It will take them time because you don't see it in your user interface and you have to manually click on the Mutalisk and send it away. So humans will suffer much more damage from single irradiates. For my bot, it's close to zero damage, I think. Maybe 10 damage maximum.
Well, my bot doesn't perform well at all, but like it can build up to 60 barracks, keep constant marine ghost production going at all at the same time, and like stutter step 200 marines individually all at the, and do everything at the same time. But like, it's not better than any human player just because it uses the worst tactic ever. But it would probably not be feasible for a human to do the same thing.
I have no idea what my bot does.
Well, who does then?
Nobody, I guess. I mean, I saw a few games and I had no idea why it does something. Even if it is something that is looking very good, I'm sometimes puzzled how the code could manage to do that. So, well, it's not very good program, I have to admit.
Well, admittance is just the first step, but you have started your journey. So yeah, emergent bot tactics, it's a favorite topic of mine, as you might have noticed. And yeah, Mutalisk micro is something that cannot really be done a human on that scale. and so many things that has to do with visibility, like floating a building over a siege tank that can mess with a human, but I think it doesn't bother bots at all.
Yeah, exactly. The bot sees exactly what's underneath the engineering bag. There was a strategy, for example, where you would put a SCV on the ramp, or two SCVs. They would repair each other or something like that, keep them busy, put a floating barracks above that and one marine behind that. And no matter how many zealots you have, they could not reach, because the zealot would like to attack the marine, but in between them there are these SCVs who do not attack the zealot, and you cannot manually click on the SCVs.
That would probably be very interesting. I wonder if a Protoss bot actually could perform, like, actually bring back a build which can't be done by humans, just because they can click on SCVs under a barracks.
And in general, like, using the ramp and using terrain to your advantage is very much untapped in both games. I mean, Nepeta likes to scream at people for not using the high ground, and that's just the top of the iceberg. And just dropping stuff behind the mineral lines is something we see rarely. But it's so obvious, and it's a free advantage. Why do you think that is?
So in general, I think we have to abuse the data from map analysis much more, like bridges are very tactical. We also seen that in with Alpha Star in the first games versus TLO, where Alpha Star was recklessly attacking through choke points, whereas that's a very big advantage for the other player. And I don't know how much more units you need to have to successfully engage. And our bots don't know how to deal with this information, how to calculate the extra units, so we would just repeatedly attack to a choke point and think that it will win, but it will just lose badly.
Do we need the terrain and collision in combat simulators? Like, I see what you mean, but I'm not sure how it would be implemented in an efficient manner.
Yeah, I have no idea. There is just so many things to consider in a combat simulator. Even without the terrain, you need to consider the angles from which the armies engage. So, for example, two armies of zealots with equal numbers, let's say 10 zealots versus another 10 zealots, or better, zerglings. It's even more micro-intensive. So if one zealot army is in a conga line and the other is in a like U-shaped, then the U-shaped army has a big advantage, and it could end up losing just half of the troops, while the other player would lose everything.
To be honest, FVP actually handles that quite well. The only problem is that we can't predict how people will move their units, or other bots, to be honest. Like, everything it does is just simulates an A move, but it does it with the unit positions. So your positions will matter, but it won't take into account any kind of unit control.
Yeah, that's also a good point, because, for example, a Dragoon with a range fighting Marines, four Marines could take out the unmicroed Dragon like this. But if a Dragon has enough space, it can just kite the Marines one by one and basically won't lose any Dragons, and the enemy can lose maybe even 10 Marines when the micro.
But you can actually pimp the simulator. I mean, I mostly copied FAP for S, but it has actually an kiting code. I use the same code as Locutus does, I think, or similar to Locutus code, and it does kiting.
on tonight's episode of sentences I'd like to take out of context.
Absolutely. I think I'm contributing quite well to that. So yeah, look, you just did implement micro into FAP, and it looks really good, but it's on an old version of FAP, so I haven't had time to integrate it yet, but I could probably look into porting it to mainline.
Also, other things to consider is, for example, reinforcements of other units. I don't know if someone takes this into account, that there might be more units in the shroud that are just coming to get you.
There is support for that. You can, at any point, you can choose how many frames to simulate. So if your bot has some kind of prediction that some unit is somewhere inside of a fog, it can say there's a unit there, or it can like simulate for 30 seconds of combat and then add on units later. That works just fine if you just write the code to do that and have some kind of sensible source for what might be happening in the fog.
Yeah, in pro games, I often see, the commentators bring this to my attention. Pros like count pylons and count units and basically infer what the other player might have hidden. And yeah, it's more often than not they are correct in that. I don't know if any of your bots do that, like try to guess what the enemy has hidden from impartial information.
Yeah, I don't do that. I would like to include something like that in my bot. So for example, that scouting would also take things that you see, but also things that I was expecting to find and did not find. This would, for example, affect Locutus' fake expand build, where he does start with Forge Cannon build, but does not build Nexus. Instead, he proxies three gates. But my bot still thinks it's a fast expansion, even though he does not see the Nexus.
Although in bot matches, the enemy just having like 3,000 minerals is a very real possibility.
That's a better term. My bot does no thinking at all. I like assume units are in the fog if they were there the last time the tile was visible. Like, if I scan the base, I assume everything is untouched and like unchanged until I get vision of it again.
Yeah, I do exactly the same. I remember the last position of the unit, and if I come back to that position and I don't see the unit, I invalidate the position, but I still remember that that unit should be somewhere. But this, for example, produces also problems, for example, with my Mutalisk, because I think that the Goliaths, for example, are still somewhere near the expansion where when I attack the main, but the Goliaths have moved between the frames, and now my Mutalisk arrive and scout much more Goliaths than they expected, and that just produces behavior when my Mutalisk want to attack, but then they realize, hey, there is much more Goliaths than I thought. Let's go back and take just three shots, and that's really bad.
I just want to say my bot also does remember the positions in the fog, but it also does forget some units. It doesn't forget tanks, siege tanks and tanks, but it forgets Goliath after a while, for example.
Yeah, that was basically what I was going to say. Probably for Mutas and versus Goliaths, for example, you don't want to keep them around and remember them for that long, since even if you do pull the Goliaths back into the base, that's still like delaying Goliaths from pushing out, and it's probably a good thing. The only thing you should probably watch out for is like not walking into them, taking unnecessary damage. But otherwise, you probably should pretend like they're not there, to be honest.
Yeah, the problem is that basically I have to estimate how many new Goliaths have been produced. I think I should add something like this, because otherwise I will always come back and new Goliaths have been produced in between, but I still remember that there is only a few, and Goliaths have a really big range, so I cannot avoid taking damage. I have to be very decisive to either go and stick to the attack or not go at all.
Goliaths are really good.
Sick unit,
bro. I'm glad you mentioned Alpha Star, because it was a talking point I wanted to go over. I think the hype and the rage and the clueless comments haven't really died down since Alpha Star video got published. In my humble opinion, Alpha Star is, first of all, it's a marvelous achievement, and it is a milestone in AI development, and you can take that away, and it's simply beautiful. That being said, I'd like to present an analogy to you. I would compare Alpha Star to the SR-71 Blackbird, one of the greatest airplanes the world have ever seen. It was made in the 60s from pure titanium chassis. Actually, I meant fuselage here, and it used special fuel, experimental jet engines, scramjet engines, and it went unbelievably fast, and no one could catch it. It was a spy plane that beat everything. Now, it cost an unbelievable amount of work, engineering, materials, and basically one of a kind. And you didn't really see airplanes with that capability, with those capabilities for the next 30 or 40 years. Not because it can't be built, it can, of course you can repeat that, but it was just unbelievably expensive. Like when you want to really go fast in an airplane, you just dump fuel into the afterburner and use that. But instead of dumping fuel into the engine and going fast, we are dumping money into AI development and going fast, because Alpha Star was extremely fucking expensive. It's estimated tens of millions of dollars. And yeah, considering the AI versus human scene is basically non-existent at this point, especially for StarCraft 2, to the best of my knowledge, it's not like we have a threat of SC2 AIs taking over the world, or championships, or even casual games. As you might guessed, I have thought about this a little. That's why I formed such great sentences. I'd like to hear your opinions on that. Maybe weigh in, maybe disagree with me.
Yeah, I really like your analogy. I have not heard something like this before. Really interesting. From my perspective, it was a nice achievement. What I actually expected was something like in the TLO games, where I could observe bot-like behaviors and also doing some stupid things. But I was pleasantly surprised by some stuff that emerged in the Versus Mana games, like it was splitting army in three and defending from three different attacks, or at least anticipating the attacks. And because micro in itself is not for me, at least, as interesting. Our bots can do that, but intelligent movement on the map and splitting forces intelligently, things like that are very that caught me by pleasant surprise.
It was very impressive, but it's I think while it's impressive, it still has the same problem as the rule based bots have, because if Mana would have found a flaw, he would have used it, and he would have used it in the next game, and AlphaStar wouldn't have changed anything. So it's very, very good. It's very good. I don't say it's not a great achievement, but I think until it's possible to say after the game you can immediately train and do not make the same mistake again, it's still a long way to go.
Yeah, even within the same game, as we saw, for example, the abuse of a drop with Immortals, which was the last game that Mana actually won, a human player would be able to detect the repeated pattern of abuse, while we don't have that kind of thing in AIs at the moment.
That was exactly the point I was going to make. We saw Mana using that unreachable by ground space and just putting his war person there, and all AlphaStar had was oracles, air units which can only hit ground, and stalkers, ground units which can hit there. So he couldn't reach the warp prison in any way, and like any sensible human would make a void ray in that situation just to push out the warp prism out of that space. Which really, I think, is telling that AlphaStar, each of those agents, they, as far as I understood, every game was a completely separate agent, and that agent was trained to do one thing and one thing only, and as soon as it was on its back foot, it could not adapt, and it was only strong when it was pushing the human player and making the human player make all the adjustments and like adjust to AlphaStar strategy, because that's the only thing AlphaStar knows.
Yes, so actually it's a bit like Seda. If you it's not the same concept, but if you know something, if you know how to beat Seda, you can beat it repeatedly, and Seda is also very good, and it's also very adaptive.
Yeah, did we actually see the AlphaStar use sentries? I don't think I've seen a force field from sentry.
I think I saw a guardian shield, nothing else. Or maybe a hallucination too, but no force field.
Yeah, because I would think force field is something pretty difficult to use for a boat, and to train both to use it properly. And since maybe AlphaStar cannot use that, maybe something ridiculous like mass immortals would work very well versus it, even from a lower player.
I'm thinking it would. I, as far as I remember, I don't think we saw it use High Templars either, and it might just have been that it was training against itself a lot, and I just have a feeling that itself it could itself handle sentries and High Templars very well, and probably learned not to use them because, well, it's very good at dodging storms and doing whatever is required to do with force fields when you have basically perfect unit control. I think it would probably learn to use sentries and High Templars if it was playing against humans as training.
It's interesting that you saw that you would train the bot to not make the same mistakes. Now, defining for a bot, what was my mistake in the last game? It's a whole problem in itself, and it's not easily definable, I think. I mean, our bots make mistakes, yes. But even though I lost to some strategy, I do not know exactly how should I not lose to that strategy again. These are two different things.
That's probably harder than playing the game itself, to be honest.
So what I think we as humans do is that we take the game, for example, as complex as StarCraft, and we create a lower or higher resolution abstraction that is basically, in my head, it could be like a turn-based strategy, very simple something, and I can do simulations in my head in this simplified frame and look for what I could do, what could I have done, where did I do mistakes, but we don't model our bots like this.
Yeah, so that's what human brains are generally very good at. They can like take a look at something and have a rough understanding in what kinds of things they need to change and to like improve on something. And I haven't seen AI be able to do that in a real manner before.
Maybe even rule-based bots could achieve something like a little bit of learning. I mean, many bots use some kind of patterns, for example, dropping somewhere. And if I don't know how hard it is for them in their code, but maybe if you do something like you do the drop and you test, you do some predictions what you expected when doing the drop and try to adapt there a bit. It wouldn't be a complete change, but it might even work better than having AlphaStar playing another 10 years.
A very interesting thing to consider that AlphaStar evolved playing against versions of itself. So basically on bot versus bot games. And being able to defeat human pros was just a side effect. And that has very, very deep implications if you think about it. And the Infinite Micro tactic, let's call it that, it developed, it wasn't specifically against humans. It was something it found to be working well. That bots don't really have attention economy. They can see everything and anything at the same time. I liked that you, Marianne, you brought up the turn-based strategy thing, because one of my articles I reasoned that bots are essentially playing a turn-based strategy. They have infinite time to think, or we have enough processing power to make their thinking time infinite. It's a completely different league.
Yeah, exactly. And basically, we need our bots to reduce the scale of the game, that we don't consider every pixel of the map, but only let's say walk tiles or build tiles and things like that. And the lower the resolution, then more mistakes we can do, but then more easily you can analyze the map, run simulations and stuff like that. You don't need thousands of supercomputers to simulate the whole game if you have a much simpler abstraction of the game that's working for your problem.
And usually, like pixel perfect micro is not worth the effort. And having just good enough methods wins every time. You don't get that much of an advantage with pixel precise micro. At least that's my experience. I started with the lowest level possible, because obviously that's the first thing you that pops into your head. But I saw no real difference when, instead of pixels, I just used walk tiles for my unit micro. What are your thoughts and experiences with that?
Yeah, exactly. For my Mutalisk, I use build tiles, and maybe even if I group the tiles to larger ones, I think the noticeable effect wouldn't be very big. Maybe I would not find every hole the defense, but I could create some other mechanisms for that. I actually have something like that in mind that could work for other units as well. And yeah, as a human, for example, how I think I evaluate two armies clashing at each other is I just look at the units and basically see what kind of units there are, and I kind of see the shape of the army approaching to the other shape and look at the shape of the obstacles. So it's basically just these kind of simple things I consider. I don't really measure pixel perfect, then I think I can estimate which army is going to win like this.
Hannes, do you place the nuking dot with a pixel perfect precision?
I actually do, but it's not that precise. Because what it does is it attempts to target the center pixel of every enemy unit and then just evaluates that set of pixel perfect positions. It assumes that the perfect nuking position is right on top of a unit.
That's probably right.
I don't think it is. Just imagine a situation where you have two tanks kind of spread out. If you could kill both of them with one nuke, and if one of them, if you have to hit one of the tanks straight on, you might only kill one tank.
A thing I'm curious about that was an API for StarCraft 2 was easier to work with than BW API. Well, at some level it probably was, but I think with the same amount of effort they could have achieved this this kind of victory for Alpha Star in Brood War. But I'm really don't know, because BW API is notoriously can be not very user friendly at times.
That's true. I wonder also if we should consider adding similar things as AlphaStar uses. Like the StarCraft 2 API has a like get this kind of matrix of the game state, and BW API has nothing like that. There's nothing that you can straight up feed into your AI solution. I'm just considering if we should add something like that to BW API, or if it just should just remain completely a programming interface and let people build their own graphical representation on top of BW API.
Well, I think the way to do that is both of those things, because BW API will be developed in some way. But there are a lot of common problems that everyone has to resolve it. But I'm not sure that they should be included in the BW API development. For example, today I was encountering a very simple problem, how to check if a tile is occupied by a unit or a building. I thought this was a functionality in BW API, and I think 99% of bot developers encountered this problem at some point. But I'm not sure that we should add this or someone should add this. However, the way forward maybe should be to have standard libraries or frameworks based upon BW API, and those would be the recommended ones. We kind of have this BWEM already.
I actually cache a little bit of this info. On every build tile, I store a pointer to the closest unit. That's quite a fair thing to have, like, cached for every tile, and it usually speeds up like accessing collisions and whatever a lot faster.
I have a complete manager classes for these and utilities that basically wrap most of the BW API things to either my functions or methods within the classes, and then I can basically do the correct behavior that I want to have. So for example, for the units that you mentioned, I compute on every frame. I have a stored grid with when I know on each tile which units are present everywhere, I can retrieve this information.
Seems like a good solution. But the point wasn't really the exact solution to this problem, but thank you for giving me some ideas. That being said, Hannes, are there any news regarding BW API 5? Any updates you would like to share?
Well, I'm pretty much done with the interface rework. The only thing that would be need reworking would be the backend, as in the protobuf stuff, communicating with over the new network protocol, but I'm basically done with the C++ interface, so I would probably say that thing is maybe like 60% done, to be honest.
Would you accept outside help? Can people effectively help you with this?
I think so. I'm not sure. Like BWAPI, it needs protobuf code, but to be honest, I don't think anyone is quite sure how we want it to work at all. That's basically where we're at. So we have a rough image of like, this is what we want to send, but we have like, no, we haven't decided at all about the format and, or anything else like that.
So you can't really specify the job requirements for that.
Exactly. We basically need to do a little bit more design first, I think.
Yeah, when you do, I will be happy to announce that in the podcast and issue a call to arms to every developer who can help us. The next question about BWAPI for everyone. What are the shortcomings or glaring flaws or epic fails in BWAPI you would like to get fixed and disagree with how it works, if any?
Turn size all the time. That's at least what I think needs to be in the API, like right now. Probably
that would be very good.
Can you elaborate on the problem, please?
So I'm going to do a quick introduction to brute or latency. Basically, when you issue a command in game, it does not take effect immediately. Instead, a few frames are grouped into what's called a turn, and the turn size is what says how many frames there are in a turn. So during this turn, it doesn't matter when during the turn you do something, because all of the commands from all of these frames are going to be grouped up and do the same and will be done at the same time. And there's no way in BWAPI to ask how large the turn size is so that you can actually like predict when the turn is about to end. And then you can do all your commands on the last frame of the turn where you have the most up-to-date data. There's no way to do that in BWAPI at the moment.
Well, okay. not directly, but I copied Dan's code for figuring out the turn size and where the last frame is, and it seems to work.
Oh, yeah. You can totally side-channel it. You can look at the remaining latency frames, and then you can derive that the turn size is equal to the lowest remaining latency frame. The latency frames minus the lowest remaining latency frames plus one. I think that's the formula. But that requires that you always keep watching that variable on every frame and change your turn size whenever it changes.
So how does this actually, for example, affect Mutualism Micro? Because I had some issues I could not solve. When I order an attack for Mutualism, then it takes X frames equal to latency frames to get the command into the to start for the Mutualism to work, right?
Yes, that is true, and it doesn't matter. Like if you do this on, let's say, with 6 latency frames, if you do it when latency frames remaining so 6, it will do the command in 6 frames. But if you wait until the next frame, remaining latency frames will say 5, and you can do commands again, which happen in 5 frames. So the command will be executed on the same frame as the previous, as if you did it on the previous frame, which is kind of a mess. And to be honest, BWAPI probably should give you some kind of interface to like say, hey, I'm not going to bother doing anything on this frame and just wait until the next frame.
Yeah, you all. You also have a very huge problem if you. Not really a huge problem, but when you do things in the first frame and it takes around 5 frames for the turn to end, you have information which is 5 or 6 frames old. It can be really a problem.
Also, like, doing half as many frames also would mean that your bot runs twice as fast, which is always nice.
Well, a shortcoming of BW API for me is just some methods are blatantly lying and not returning the things they were supposed to be. Just
My first thought when you say that is like the angle probably return. I think it returns a double of like degrees instead of like the 0 to 256 value used internally in the game. Is that the kind of thing you mean?
Yes, for example, and the whether or not the transport is loaded. You know, I just want to trust BW API again.
Whoops! That function may be like kind of messy. It's hard to get them done.
I think one other thing is that you can gather some information from the enemy orders that you should not be able to gather. Maybe it would be better if you could maybe check somehow in what animation state is the unit or something like that. That would make maybe more sense to me, but it may be more complex to do.
Yeah, animation state and angle, to be honest, is the only thing I think you should be able to see.
But that's more of a design thing, right? I mean, some information is clear for to you as a human player, like which unit of that tank is attacking. To some degree, bots should be able to know that, right?
Right, bots can see that in the same way that humans can based on the bullet API. There's an interface for that. I could, right now, I could change it so that it can't see enemy orders, but I'm not sure, like, if people would like that. We would probably need to do some kind of poll to, like, make a decision on if we should prune the enemy orders or not.
So
can you actually get the angle of the turret of a siege tank? Because as a human player, while you cannot evade it, you can see the head of the turret turning and then firing. So you get the information before the shot, the bullet.
I assume you can. I haven't tested it, but we should fix it if it's not working. That's all.
And eventually, maybe we will have an API for StarCraft Remastered. Is there any features in Remastered that is working differently, or a new addition, or something that BW API could benefit from? I have zero idea about this because I don't have StarCraft Remastered.
As far as the API is concerned, no. You probably won't notice any difference if it's running on 1.16 with a very old version of BW API and StarCraft Remastered. It will feel completely the same, to be honest. And I don't think we need any kind of API interface changes for the remaster. Well, except for the thing about units going out to vision and going back in, and you know which kind of unit it is, or if it was the unit you saw previously. That's the only thing I think that's going to change.
So the IDs will change or something like that?
We won't keep track of when units reappear in vision. You won't know that that was the unit you had vision of earlier. You won't be able to see that anymore.
Yeah,
but
that's
a BW API 5 change and not a remaster change. So that will apply to old Brood War 2.
Okay, so in the next patch, this information will be lost, right?
Yes, exactly.
I think it's right. It's kind of neat to have it, but we as humans don't have it, so neither the bot should. And what is actually the state for the remaster integration? Where Do we have any expectation when we can see it coming?
I have no idea. Maybe 2 months after official BW API release would be my guess.
And when can we expect the official BW API?
Oh God, I have no idea. but remaster will probably be sometime not that far away from that. I would assume that they're keeping an eye on what we're doing and like kind of keeping up, and that they would only need to do a little bit of testing to do integration later.
Okay.
Yeah, we hope it will come soon. I think we have finished dissecting BW API capabilities and lack thereof. And with that, I would like to move on to the different topic, which is not really related to programming, but more of a personal thing for everyone. As both developers, this is a hobby project for most of us, I think. And with every hobby project, you experience ebbs and flows, like you don't want to do it, you are not successful, you fuck up a lot, mostly that. And I don't know what's your take on it, what inspires you and what makes you just throw away the keyboard and not doing the bot development for years. This was really aimed at you, Marianne, because KillerBot wasn't updated for years.
Yeah, sure. So, I sometimes, bot development is very, difficult, but also rewarding thing. It's likely the one of the difficult programming things I have ever done, so it's kind of a push forward challenge to me. And as for the time investment, I have life. You need to go to work, and I have other hobby projects and other projects that are not related to other hobbies that are not related to programming, so stuff like that. So my focus is always split between many things, and there is only so much time in a day, only so much energy I can invest to this. So actually last year I was not expected to do any changes to my bot, but I was kind of fast on my other projects, so I decided I can invest last few months of my time to bot development.
And we are very glad that you did.
Yeah, thanks. I think it actually did not improve so much my bot, because I think the things that improve your bot the most are when you work on the basics of your bots, when your bot can defeat the challenges that are presented to you the first, let's say, 5 minutes, to defeat all the nonsense rushes, and so you always build the things, you don't screw up blocking your chokes and fighting off the early zerglings and stuff like that, that make the most impact for your win rate. But I was working mostly on my mutalisks, and I also did some fixes here and there. But as it goes with fixes in this bot world, sometimes when you fix one thing, other things fall apart. So it's really fun.
Yeah. For me, I got a little demotivated when I implemented jump points search basically completely wrong. I was so angry, I began writing unit tests for the basic methods that just returned some values. And, well, the approach worked because my algorithm is returning a good path now, but I'd rather not reach that point and state of mind in the future.
Yeah, when you are working with frustration, it's always better to just do something different for some time, let the frustration pass, and return back later.
Yeah, you should never be working on something which you feel like, oh, I need to finish this. You should always find this is something on the bot to work on, because like, oh, hey, I would like to really do this at the moment. And you should never feel forced to do any of those kind of things, because, well, everything has to be done. So just do what you find is most fun at the moment.
Disclaimer, this does not apply to your workplace. Thank you.
That is very true.
Yeah, I try to identify like three states of work and thought process, and one is that you like to see your work done as fast as possible. You try to see it in action. Then you basically do code maybe in the ugly way and in inefficient way. You omit the safeties, but you want to see it work as soon as possible. Then the other phase is you actually identify that I want to make this code more beautiful. I want to make it more dry, that it does not repeat itself, more architectural style, things like that, more bug-proof. And the third phase is basically thinking phase, where you think what to do next, how to do next things. And in this third phase, you actually don't have to be near the computer. You can be in the shower or on toilet or wherever. You can be walking or in the traffic jam, and the best thoughts might come to your head.
Yeah, I force myself to never implement something until I have a clear idea how I want to structure it and how I want to write the code. I think that generally helps a lot with not writing bad code, to be honest.
One thing just came to my mind is I find it very frustrating to test something more advanced. For example, if you want to test a queen behavior or something, you'll have to fight another bot who can manage to survive until you got queen. So sometimes something I'd like to see in BW API would be to have the option to save a state. I don't know if it's possible, easy to be possible, but to save a state and reload that state so you can test from that point on. That is something that really helped.
It's something which should, to be honest, work today. If on the develop branch of BW API 5, if you somehow make it installed backend, we have addressed, I think, everything which makes BW API 5, it should never like have any kind of difference in ordering of units or anything. If you save the game and somehow load up the same game and your bot doesn't do anything which is changes from game to game, it should just restore the state as is.
Yeah, and something like a replay analyzer would be a very great tool for this.
So I had a problem with something like loading the state from replays, because in replays the unit IDs were changed compared to the in-game ID, so I could not map it properly. Will this be somehow addressed in BW API 5?
I have no idea. I didn't even know what the units ID were different. I think that we might just be happy with being able to save and load the game, and that just, and maybe we'll just be happy with that. I'm not sure about how replays work. I would need to look into that first before answering that question.
Yeah, sure.
I really like your philosophy on the three states of work. And I have something similar. And there is this thought that first make it work, then make it pretty. And this can be a good way, but the definition of make it work has to be very, very clear. Because most of the time, the problem is I don't know exactly where I'm done. This is I'm sure you have encountered that in your professional life as well. When is this task done? When do I say that, okay, I have implemented this and it is working properly? It's a harder question than one would think at first.
Or even worse, when you've finished implementing something, it works properly, and your bot loses its win rate.
Yeah, definition of done. Right. So I usually don't look that far away. I just want to see, for example, I don't know, I was coding the Mutalisk, and my workflow was something like this. I created a user map setting map with, I don't know, one turret or something, and then I placed one Mutalisk and basically wanted the Mutalisk to avoid the turret. Then I placed, created another map and had, say, five Mutalisks, and I wanted the five Mutalisks to engage the turret and stuff like this incrementally, and I just wanted to small steps done and basically avoid thinking where I want to have this in 1 month.
Yeah, but it's a dangerous thing, because usually if I note something, okay, I will improve this later when I have the time. More often than not, late means never.
Sure, I have a big list of things that I would like to fix or I would like to add, and these lists usually I write a new list every half year or something like that, and forget about the last list. Maybe some things will move from the last list to the new list, but it's just maybe a mind map of some sort. I don't really stick to that. I just do what I feel at that particular time.
It's interesting that you mentioned that you set up maps, and like every time you change something, you manually check if it's working. Something you probably could do, if you're willing to spend like a day on setting up projects, you could set up OpenBW builds and set up all your maps to be loaded in OpenBW. And every time you build, every time you change something in your bot, you can run unit tests on maps. There's code for how we do it for BWEM community version. We actually do run unit tests through OpenBW every time we change code.
Continuous integration is a wonderful thing.
Yes, absolutely. And OpenBW makes it possible to do that for StarCraft bots too.
Yeah, I might consider doing that. But one problem I have is sometimes I don't have a clear output of the scenario. So, for example, I had some scenarios where I would have some hatcheries, drones would be mining minerals, and I will be building only Hydralisks. And then in the middle of a map, there will be a blob of, I don't know, tanks or Goliaths or stuff like that. And I would just test if the bot builds enough of the Hydras to engage properly and not lose, or just not to send one by one and lose the Hydras. But I would not know without looking at the battle if it's actually working fine. I would not know how to set the conditions.
That's very true. Just knowing if your bot is failing is very hard to judge.
Yeah, right.
My favorite thing ever is, I don't remember who, but some bot author in its GitHub had a bug ticket named "My bot lost to Hannes." This is the best joke in the BW API scene ever.
If bot.
Yeah, that's if bot, my bot lost to, and that was me he lost to, and that was like, yeah, I've given up on bot development now.
It was awesome. All right, and last topic for today. Since this is the 10th episode of The Undermind, I'd like to ask you a little to what and who would you like to listen on the podcast. This is a question aimed at the listeners as well, but let's hear my guests' thoughts on that.
I guess and everyone you had was interesting in one way or another. I would, of course, like to, for example, hear Crazio on, but I heard that he does not want to be in heard in public or something like that.
What about Dan? Let's not devolve into speculations.
I would love to hear from Crazio too. I would love to hear some voice to begin with. But I haven't actually listened to that many episodes, so I'm not sure at all, to be honest. I've only listened to the latest one and a couple of ones in the beginning.
I think it would be nice to have some of the Facebook team on to hear what they're up to.
I think it's not a secret that they are not allowed to just talk to anyone. But yeah, I would like to have them as well.
I would love to too, but yeah, we can't have it.
How about somebody from the SIDA team? That would be cool too.
I would assume the same goes for them, but I don't think anyone has actually asked them. So probably something which should be done.
Yeah, that's. I haven't actually asked them as of yet. It is worth a try.
Maybe also someone would be. I mean, there are a lot of bot authors with which are very active, but their bots are not in the top rank. So it would be nice to have someone to talk about his motivations, even if he doesn't manage to enter the top 10.
I'm not selective based on ladder ranking. I'd like to hear from anyone involved in this scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm here. Look at me. I have like 20% win rate. I'm call me crazy, but would it be absolutely like bad to bring someone who's interested in writing a bot on, like, so we could have a casual conversation about how to start, and not just among we did that before, but that was basically with people who have been making bots for a while. Like, what about if we have someone on who could ask questions which they have about writing a bot?
I would be open to that.
You could also have Michael Chartitsky on, for example, if he would like to.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Indeed. Okay, then let's wrap up the cast. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
And see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.